Stephanie Schaefer, and you're listening to the North Star Narrative, a podcast from North Star Academy. I want to thank you for joining us. I hope you're encouraged, challenged, and motivated by what you learned today. Enjoy the story. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show today. So excited that you could join us because we have a really special guest that I'm excited to get to know more. It is Dr. Dini Van Pelt, and she resides in Canada, and she is the chair of the Charlotte Mason Institute Board. She is a visiting research fellow in Charlotte Mason Studies at the University of Cumbria and a non-resident scholar at Baylor University Center for School Leadership. She currently leads EDVANCE, which is an association of over 95 independent Christian schools, and is a senior fellow at the think tanks CARTIS and the Fraser Institute, where her work focuses on education policy. So I'm really excited to get to know you more, Dr. Van Pelt, and that you would just come share about Charlotte Mason and the digital age and where education is going today.
It's so good to be here, and it's lovely to get to know you, Stephanie.
Yeah, all right. So many questions, don't even know where to start, but maybe for those that do not know about Charlotte Mason, you could give a very brief overview of what it is, the curriculum, and what it means to maybe for a parent to walk that out daily, and then how you got so involved with Charlotte Mason.
In about 4 or 5 sentences, all of that. So I think, first of all, Charlotte Mason to me is two people. She's an educationalist and she's also a leader. And what I love about her is the way that she not only was a philosopher and able to articulate her philosophy, she could put it into practice. So as an educationalist, she was radical for her times. So she was born in the 1840s. When she's about 45 years old, she gives a series of lectures. So she's been an elementary school teacher. She's taught at post-secondary level. She's done a lot of thinking. She gives a series of lectures in 1885 and puts her ideas together in a way that they catch on with parents. And it was that series of lectures that turned into a whole education movement. What she said resonated with parents then, such that people gathered around her and put legs on her ideas through a number of institutions. And that's where her ability as an educational leader shows up. But not only did those ideas resonate then in the late 19th century and early 20th century, they're resonating again today. There's a truth. There's an element of wisdom in her ideas that seem to transcend century. We're talking ideas that have lasted over 3 different centuries that are very different from one another. And yet at their core, they hold a lot of intrigue and potential. So let's drill down a little bit. My own acquaintance with her, it was 1995. I had a 5-year-old daughter who was so ready to go to kindergarten, but a few months in seemed to be drying up. And as we saw her get more and more sad and tried to work with the school, and we found that there was some kind of misalignment about what we as parents hoped for education, but more importantly, what our own child seemed to deeply desire and need for her education, the fact that that was not really coming together, we started asking some questions. And in fact, we took a look at the Education Act here in Ontario, and it said a child didn't have to go to school till they were 6. And my husband said, well, she's only 5. So why don't we just keep her home for another year? And I'm like, yeah, but honey, that means we're a homeschooler then. And those are very strange people. And so I loved schooling. I loved education. I was a public high school teacher at the time. I had already taught in a private Christian high school. So I was not at all interested in becoming a different form of educator. But what I was interested now for the first time in my life was getting to the huge, most important foundational questions. Why do we educate? And are we sure we're doing it right? And I could see in my daughter's eyes that we weren't, we, the big we as society. And I felt this incredible responsibility that someday we would have to give account for the education of our own child. And as much as I wanted to contribute much more broadly and at a larger scale, it was our child that ultimately, our children, that we were responsible for. So we did make this radical decision to step away from formal schooling and look at something different. And somebody said to me, oh, I heard you became a homeschooler. You'll like this person, I think. And she handed me a book that is that has changed my life, Foundations for Education. The first title is For the Children's Sake, and it's written by Susan Schaefer McCauley. And that book was only it was just a decade old at that time. And that book stimulated a whole movement of people who were asking similar questions. And when Susan Schaefer McCauley was asking that question for her own children, she came upon a solution where her children actually did start to come alive. And as her own children were coming alive, she asked the teachers in the school, well, what's going on here? And they said, oh, we practice some of the ideas of Charlotte Mason. So in the same way that Susan Schaefer McCauley became very interested in exploring, well, who is this philosopher Charlotte Mason? I also did, and many others around us. So that part of the story was personally nourishing, to then find a whole group of other educators that were interested in asking the same questions. And this group was an international group of people. Now, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have access to resources in the same way that we do now, but we did have access to the 6 books that Charlotte Mason had written on education. Mm. So we devoured those as one could do in those days. And there's lots more bits to that story, but I would say it all boils down to your own one's own quest at asking the deep questions. Am I sure we're doing this right? Is there another way? And that's what I find is at the heart of many people's discovery of Charlotte Mason.
That's so good. And I can see your passion that, yeah, you've gained from watching her because she was such a great leader. So that's what stuck out to me is researching her and seeing her. What can we learn from leadership? What have you learned about leadership from Charlotte?
She gathered people around the ideas, and she embedded them in institutions. So in this way that she captivated people's imagination for what else could be, she then helped them put legs on it by institutionalizing it. So what do I mean? First thing that happens is she sets up a union of parents. It's this network of these small parent groups who are all asking the same question. And they get themselves organized across the country. And they have, so they're independent local chapters, but all connected in with something larger, the PNEU, Parents National Education Union. The second thing she did is she establishes a teachers' college. So we've got to find a place if people are going to follow her ideas, somebody's got to be teaching the ideas. She sets up a curriculum, the Parents Union School was sort of the name of the curriculum. So through the PNEU, they offer a curriculum, they offer parental support, they offer teacher support. She offers the formation and the education of the teachers through the college that she sets up. That college still exists. I mean, originally it was called the House of Education. It went through different names, but it's in Ambleside. It's part of the University of Cumbria to this day. Charlotte Mason's name is on many of those buildings. She gave the college at her death to the university that was eventually established. So her legacy was embedded in the architecture, was embedded in institutions. And I'll just say one more institutionalization of her ideas was through setting up a journal. She became editor of a monthly journal that published from, I think it was 1894, for 99 years. That journal published every single month with many articles in it. Charlotte Mason brought in voices of all sorts of educational experts who were also intrigued by her ideas, who had alignment with her ideas, and who could help explore them, unpack them, and become some of the experts that would inform some of the curriculum that they were developing. So this multifaceted institutional embodiment of a philosophy, a way of putting legs on great ideas, that's what leaders do. She's a fabulous leader. A fabulous educational leader, and I think still holds great role model capacities for each one of us involved in educational leadership today.
Yeah. I think she's rare because it's hard to find a visionary and that same visionary that can actually put things into practice.
Well said.
But she did that. That's incredible. So that's why she's so inspiring, and I can tell she's inspired you, and then we could sit here and also say the same thing about you, a list of things and how you have been able to inspire many. So really, really cool. Love it. Okay. So one of the things I've been learning about Charlotte Mason's curriculum is it's around the whole person, making everything personalized based on the individual and seeing the person so that you can help with the emotional, social learning. I mean, just all of that. Can you tell me more of how you see that played out?
Yes. And it sounds almost bland to say a child is a person to our 21st century ears. But picture her standing up in 1885 saying, the child is a person. In Canada, women became persons legally in 1929. So I'm not sure when that happened in other countries, but just for a little bit of context, to think about children as persons at that time was radical. And what it means through the lens, certainly, of our time, and that's been so important to me. Notice the word person is a singular noun, but it's different from the word individual. The child is an individual. When we say the child is a person, we suddenly embed them in a whole philosophy of personhood or personalism. And by that, we mean, what is a person? A person is one who is born into and for relationship. By your very nature as a person, you are in relation. You're born in a place, in a time, to certain people, with certain characteristics. You're in relation with your past, with where you are. You're in relation with what is to come. There is this relational identity. And for those born within in families that have religious and spiritual understanding, that is part of the identity of that child right from their birth. So Mason sets up this education that recognizes children are persons. They have this capacity, this identity as being in relation. And then they have capacity for relationship. So she even says, education is the science of relations. Well, what does that mean? What kind of relations? Four types: with God, with others, with the universe, and with themselves. And she sets up her whole education around that. How do we stimulate the child to be in relation with God, with the divine, with the supernatural, to have a sense of the transcendent, to have a sense of not only the material, but the immanent, to have an awareness of something beyond what can be seen? How do we then, if we are to educate for that kind of relation, how do we set things up in that way to create that kind of imagination for that relationship? An imagination for relationships with others. How do we set up an education that sets a child in relation with those who have lived before them? Those who live now, but in different places, and those who are to come. Well, Mason says it's through literature. Literature, let's bring a child into relation with other people through story. And it turns out now, through the research that we can actually do in 21st century, that if the emotional part of the brain is stimulated, we actually do learn better and ideas stick. So Mason's saying this in the 19th century, to bring a child to knowledge and to understanding, do it through story, stimulate the emotion, draw them into the life of someone else, and then you can start unfolding knowledge. So rather than knowledge being just this factual list of things and dates and places and events, it's actually first told through person, and that's the gateway to knowing. And then relation with the universe. Well, this is fantastic, right? How does a child relate to the world around them, to science, to geography, geology? So Mason has an education not only filled with books, but also with experiences. How are they getting to know the place around them? And every child will keep a nature notebook. They'll start collecting, they'll have a book of firsts, so they'll be aware of when the birds are arriving, when flowers are coming, starting to bloom. In fact, they'll know every plant, animal, insect, fish, geological formation that happens within a mile or of where they live. So she wants them intimately acquainted with where they live and what lives, what else lives and grows. And it's on that foundation that a child then starts to acquire this larger understanding of the world, of science, this larger awareness of being awakened and learning how to attend and notice first locally, but then also more broadly. So acquaintance with the universe. So imagine that's an incredible foundation for any kind of science, future study in science, for drilling down much more deeply in any of the more precise sciences later on. And then finally, knowing themselves. So having an understanding of their humanness, of their nature, of what it is to be human, and learning to understand their own character weaknesses, to develop habits, to understand what it is to be a person of character. In another place, Mason said education is about the formation of character, almost as though that's the most important thing. So how do we become and grow into being people of good character? So the whole metaphor of relationship is rooted in the personhood of the child and personalism philosophy, which I think is really grounding then. Then you can get to, okay, what are great practices in education? What are good educational methods? Like when we get to the how, we aren't just like filling up our treasure chest full of, oh, that looks like a good pedagogical approach. Oh, that looks like a neat idea. Oh, I saw this. That seemed to work in someone else's classroom. You're not just filling your toolbox with cool ideas. You're actually finding a philosophy and an anthropology out of which comes the method and helps us as educators and parents to identify which approaches are going to help us to achieve these larger goals rooted in the understanding of the person and the philosophy.
Mm, that's so good. And so I heard you talk about relationships and story. And nature were some of the things that popped out. So I think never before have so many people known or are realizing the need for relationships. I just see people talking about it more, you know, probably since COVID. And it's incredible. I love it because everything is relational. And so teaching kids that, and then the story that reminds me of chronological Bible teaching, which mm-hmm. I've been involved in for years. And it's all about the story, God's story. So how does one's life fit into God's story? And then the big question with AI or digital age is going to be, what does it mean to be human? And so I heard all of that in what you were saying, and then nature, experiencing all that God created, which opens the mind and helps in so many ways. So would love to touch on some of that, especially how would you define the next gen learning in the context of education, and how does it align or differ from the methods and approaches that Charlotte Mason offers?
So let's talk about the ideal education, what it could be as we move into this new era that is very much defined by AI, as you've indicated. If we are persons living in specific times and places intended, designed for relationship, then indeed education is about relationship. At its core, relationship has the concept of care. When I know about something, it doesn't mean I care about it. When I'm in relation with something, typically there's the element of care, even of love. So if education, as Jamie Smith, a philosopher from Kelvin University, says, what if education is more about identifying and forming our loves than about anything else? That can give us a different understanding about what we're doing and how we use our time, these precious 12 years we have with children before they head off to post-secondary. You know, Mason has this incredible quote that's so popular, and I think we can unpack it in so many ways. So I want to put it into our room right now, if that's okay. She says, the question is not how much does the youth know when he has finished his education, but how much does he care? And about how many orders of things does he care? In fact, how large is the room in which he finds his feet set, and therefore, how full is the life that he has before him? So when I hear that and I think about our time with technology being able to do so many of the things that and put together so many of the things that we as humans used to have to take an enormous amount of time to do, it makes me think about the need as humans, and noticing this quote, to be aware of so many orders of things and to care about that. So our role as educators, as Mason would say, is to set the banquet, lay out the feast, create the environment that the child then comes to. And it includes a wide variety of courses with all kinds of nutrition and nutrients. Colorful, more dull looking. Some are saucy, some are chunky, some are... Well, what is that? That's a vast amount of subjects that we lay before a child. So we, in a full education that prepares a child for many orders of things, we have a very rich and full curriculum that seeks to introduce a child to a wide diversity of subjects and ideas. And that's why a Charlotte Mason education, a relational education, will include art, music, poetry, history, geography, physical education, handicrafts, literature, math, science, languages, and so many other areas. We owe it to a child, Mason says, to initiate an immense number of interests. So, not just exposure to or awareness of, but interest in. How does tech do that? Tech can't do that. A digital space cannot just do that without we, the adults, intervening and helping to identify what is beautiful in each of these subject areas. What ought we to expose our children to? The role for educators and our wisdom in this moment, and then the invitation to the child, to the student, to grow and create this broad awareness can be enhanced, obviously, by the digital space and by all of the lists and the things that can be pulled together so quickly. But it's up to us to digest and to come to know and also to love and care.
Yeah, I want to compare a little bit North Star to Charlotte Mason because yeah. I feel like we have a lot of the same interest for students. And just to get your opinion on some of it, like I know short lessons are important, brain breaks are important. We focus heavy on literature, especially in our language arts, its quality over quantity. We work on skill sets and just really want our students to be critical thinkers, making sure not to give our opinion. We vary our activities. And one of the things I love is we have huge flexibility where students, based on their needs, get to pick how they're going to do their courses, how they're, you know, each day they can vary their courses in any way they, you know, them and their supervisor choose to do. And so do you think online school like North Star Academy, some of our courses would fit in knowing that I think we need to expose students to online courses, the digital age, especially before they get to the university?
Mm-hmm. So the form that this type of education takes can be incredibly varied. So we know Mason set up this correspondence school. She had students all over the world and they would mail things in and they had, you know, educators in England and then educators who worked with them wherever they were abroad. We know that she set up small classrooms. We know that there were, and small schools, that we know that there were some larger schools. We know that there were some, school, like classrooms that were actually in homes. And then there were some just parents homeschooling their own children. So it wasn't so much the form, the way it was packaged. Is it 5 days a week? Is it 6 days a week? Do we have Wednesday afternoons off and Friday after? Like it can take many manifestations. And what we're seeing, especially coming out of COVID with the learning centers and the learning pods that are being stimulated and set up all in all sorts of places, you could hardly tell, is that homeschooling? Is that schooling? Is that, oh, and it also includes some online classes. Like the variety of ways that this philosophy can be applied and packaged, delivered, I think that's open. I don't think there is one particular preferred format. As long as we remember that the child's nature, that the education has to work with the child's nature, and their nature has a spiritual and a physical dimension. And Mason wants them outside. She wants them active. She wants them becoming their manual dexterity to be developed and enhanced. They are whole people. So if whatever the format is that we deliver the education, whether it's in a classroom that includes desks, or some other format, it has to recognize the whole nature of the child. You and I don't want to ever see a child sitting in front of a screen for hours a day, because that doesn't we know what that does to our humanity. It diminishes parts of us and just so over accentuates other parts. And maybe later in our life, phases of it have to be like that because of work arrangements. But in these years, while the child is being formed and becoming all that they can be, we obviously want to have an education that is filled with books, learning, and experiences learning as well.
Yeah. And just like for Charlotte Mason with North Star, the parent involvement is so important.
Yes.
And so, yeah, reminding your student, okay, it's time to jump up and get out in nature, be involved in activities and other hobbies and being around people. So I think that is so important. I want to talk a moment about the narration that is so important. So back to the stories, you know, whether they're reading a book and then able to put it in their own words, because critical thinking is so important here at North Star. How did you understand? You know, do you understand? Are you able to put it in your own words? So tell us a little bit about why that is such an important part of Charlotte Mason.
Yeah. You know, Charlotte Mason says that the acceptance or the rejection of ideas is the child's main task. They are to become the agents in discerning what they are going to love and believe and care about. We give the banquet. We give them the best. You mentioned quality literature. You have your definition of what that is. You give them the best. Still, they are going to encounter ideas and they need to process, accept, reject. And part of how that's done is through this act of narration that Mason suggested. So narration, it's based on the foundational understanding that children as persons do have active minds and they must interact with the feast that's in front of them. And they must digest the ideas that are presented to them to actually really know them and really integrate them. So by telling back, first it's verbally, just telling back what has been read to them. It isn't just to see if they were listening and they heard what we, the educator or the parent, read to them. They are actually in the process of digesting. It is an act of learning, not so much to assess or evaluate. The act of narrating, of telling back, is a way of processing and making the knowledge their own. And I love how narration isn't just oracy. You know, researchers are telling us how important oracy is in a child's education. And if you think about the decades we had where children had to sit quietly in desks and not speak, the damage that does to the oral capacities and the rhetorical capacities, which we know is so important in our times as well. An education that involves narration develops the oral capacity, but it isn't just oracy. It is also written, ability to explain succinctly, but with emotion and with the child reading through, well, what will they retell? What parts are going to make it into the story? What unique phrases, interesting words that no one ever explicitly taught them and suddenly are part of the vocabulary they're using. This narration has such an integral role in Mason's full understanding of how we ought to teach and learn that I think we still haven't plumbed the depths of its potential and what it can look like in the education we offer.
Yeah. And that brings me back to the chronological Bible teaching I've been so involved in, because okay, we would always say, you know, you're You're reading the Bible chronologically. We're pulling out stories. We're talking about what we're seeing, but you do not really know it until you can teach it, until you can share it. And as you're telling the story, everyone is going to be different because you pull different themes, threads through the story. And so it's so cool because I love it. Yeah. You know, when you're sharing Christ with someone or, you know, sharing your story, it's much better, like if they're struggling with the problem, to be able to tell a story than just give your opinion, because people identify with story. I mean, stories, you can go all the way back to Cinderella. What little girl that just heard the story of Cinderella doesn't identify with, oh, a prince, you know, and gets them excited. And so I love that. I love so much learning about Charlotte Mason and the credible leader and, yeah, just these different aspects that children are exposed to because of her, because of the vision she had. And I'm sure it was hard pressing on, you know, in that time, but she did. And so many parents got excited and fires were lit in them to share with their children and others. So, yeah, is there anything practical that parents that may be listening, other educators, whether they're using Charlotte Mason or not, can just walk away with during this time, where education is going? What do you practically see we should be doing?
Wow. You know, we can make this really complex, or it can be just possible. And so I'll say two things. My own journey with meeting Charlotte Mason and then meeting people who are interested in Charlotte Mason has been so enriching. I've met so many thoughtful, curious, mostly women throughout my adult years because of a shared intrigue with Charlotte Mason. What I find is a lot of these people don't have the answer, but they're asking the same question and they're doing it wisely and humbly and with this posture of wanting to probe and learn together. So the people that Charlotte Mason seems to gather around her, certainly in her own time, she gathered some incredibly well-positioned, gifted thinkers of her day around her to help unfold her ideas, but also to lead and to be part of the movements and the institutions she was setting up. That experience continues to happen to today. So if you're looking for companions, wise, thoughtful, interesting companions, as an educator, as a parent, Charlotte Mason communities are really fantastic spaces to find such friends. And then the second thing that I would say, her ideas are also not fully understood for their potential in our times. Even personhood, the philosophy of personalism, as I've learned more about it and written about it, I wrote a short monograph about it and released it as part of a series this past summer. You can find it on Amazon, the Charlotte Mason Centenary series. Personalism is a philosophy of the 20th century. And the one main author, philosopher, a Spanish philosopher that I was reading about it, he said it's actually up to those of us in the 21st century to unfold what it means for education. So I find that a really exciting invitation. So first of all, we're part of something that's unfolding that we're really learning about now in our time. The second thing I would say is her philosophy can be really rich and deep and complex, because if you're eager to understand how to do everything just according to the book, or does it match current research precisely, it can fill a lifetime, as it does for many of us, of scholarship. But it can also be a gentle and simple, not simplistic, a simple start to an excellent home life and an excellent education that you're offering for children. Start with beautiful books. Fill your home, your life, your libraries, your classroom with beautiful books. Think carefully about what a living book is. Find the lists and start to fill your lives. And then open those books together, read together. I often, when I speak with adults, use children's literature. It's life-giving. Quality children's literature transcends any age. And fill your life with intrigue for the natural world. And finally, create spaces to understand the non-material part of our identity and our reality. And if we have curiosity and create opportunity for those three parts to fit into our lives, that's a beautiful life for any of us, but that is a life-giving education for a child as well.
What are a couple of books, maybe one book for younger and one book for older, that you would say, you've got to, these are the books, go get them today?
Oh, dear. Okay. I'll just say what first came to my mind. Metalli Perkins. She wrote a book at Lent. I'm forgetting the name of it. And she just released one for Advent. Most beautiful art and storytelling. And she's also written a book on books. So look for Metalli Perkins.
Okay. Thinking about AI, the digital world. So we've got this thing called ChatGPT that some students are learning about. What is your philosophy? How are you encouraging parents to, yes, interact with this, you know, not interact with this? I would love to know your thoughts.
We are very seriously engaging the question at the Charlotte Mason Institute and in other places. It is a question of our times, and our own use is not to avoid, but to use it, to be part of shaping it, to be part of understanding it. But how we weave it directly into a child's education, there are others who can answer that question better than me and who are working on answering that question.
I so enjoyed just being with you and learning from you. And yeah, just these practical advice that no matter who you are, you can incorporate these themes and living principles in your life. So thanks for giving that to us today.
Thanks so much for focusing on Charlotte Mason in this podcast, Stephanie. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening today. If you have any questions for our guest or would like information about North Star, please email us at podcast@nsa.school. We love having guests on our show and getting to hear their stories. If you have anyone in mind that you think would be a great guest to feature, please email us and let us know. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss out on upcoming stories.